This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it is all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you, as always, for the next hour on Sirius 216, XM 204, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere that you get your podcasts each and every week. Well, trainers Norm Cassie and Larry Rivelli are certainly no strangers to Trainer Talk. They both appeared on this program before, and they're certainly familiar with a place we call the Winner's Circle, and that is exactly where both found themselves this past Saturday following a couple of momentous wins in their respective careers. Veteran trainer Larry Rivelli took out his trainer's license in 1999, and he saddled more than 1,700 winners. He's soon to be at 1,800. He knows the feeling of being on the Derby trail, but he's yet to make that walkover on the first Saturday in May. That can all change this year if Jeff Ruby Stakes winner Two Phils continues his progression over the next 5.5 weeks. Larry's going to join me in the second half of today's show. For trainer Norm Cassie, my guest in the first half of today's program, last Saturday was another block, if you will, in the foundation of what he is building and what promises to be a highly successful training career. Since going out on his own in 2018, Norm has tallied 138 wins. None of those bigger, though, than this victory he celebrated at Fairgrounds on Saturday afternoon.
They come for home. It's Pretty Mischievous. She's taking the lead from Hoosier Philly. Charging now is South Lawn. The Ellis look on the far outside. And dropping back was Christian Duro. It's Pretty Mischievous to catch. One furlong to go. Pretty Mischievous, but here comes South Lawn, who's rattling home for the meet's leading rider, Relu Gutierrez. South Lawn has taken the lead. South Lawn's racing away. South Lawn and the Fairgrounds Oaks by 3. Pretty Mischievous was second. The Ellis look third. Hoosier Philly and Christian Duro was eased up.
Those dulcet tones of John G. Dooley with the call of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks. South Lawn, Relu Gutierrez aboard, winning by more than 3 lengths over a field that included Pretty Mischievous and Hoosier Philly. And boy, South Lawn made it look easy for my guest in the first half of today's show, Norm Cassie. Norm, thanks for taking the time and congratulations, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure, and I appreciate you guys and your support that you've always given me, so I thank you for having me back on.
Yeah, you know, you go back and you listen to that call as you just were as we come on the air here for this show today, and South Lawn's so impressive. What was going through your mind as you were listening to John's call once again?
Just excited. I think you hit it already. I mean, it's clearly the biggest race that I've won in my career so far, but I don't know if that's really what's going through my mind more than, what the future holds for her.
What does the future hold? How good can she be?
I mean, I think she can be a very, very talented horse. I mean, clearly she's already staked caliber. She's showing that she's only getting better every time she starts. But being from Louisville, Kentucky, there's really only one other race other than the Kentucky Derby that I would like to win, and that would be the Kentucky Oaks. So we're that's the destination we're hoping for.
I was talking about this race on my Equine Forum show last Saturday morning, and I said that I really believed that the favorite for the Kentucky Oaks was coming out of this race because Pretty Mischievous and Hoosier Philly, if either one of those two won the Fairgrounds Oaks, they were going to be the favorite on the first Friday in May. South Lawn probably not necessarily going to be the favorite, but boy, she beat two really top-notch fillies in that race, and she did it quite easily.
Yeah, and honestly, Mike, she ran the way she's been training. She's always trained like she was a very talented horse. Last year, we thought that, you know, that she was a Breeders' Cup type horse. Like, we were really disappointed that we didn't make it to the Breeders' Cup with her. Thought that she would run in the Pocahontas and she would run better there. And really just took a step back, worked on some things. Clearly that's worked. And now, you know, I don't care if we're the favorite. The Oaks is completely wide open, in my opinion. And I feel like we have a tremendous shot. So it's just a super – it's going to be a very exciting spring, to say the least.
As I was looking through her past performances, I noticed that it seemed at first – and correct me if I'm wrong, Norm – that you had a pretty clear game plan with this filly. You start her off 5.5 furlongs at Churchill in her first start in June of last year. She doesn't run up to expectations that day, but boy, did she ever in her next start at Ellis Park when she breaks her maiden going a mile on the main track. But that was a race taken off the turf, and then you bring her right back in the Pocahontas, as you mentioned. It seemed like the game plan was pretty clear, but then you experimented with a couple turf races, and now you're back to the dirt, and it just, for whatever reason, it seems like the light bulb has gone on.
You know, I have no reservations explaining exactly what happened. I'm sure some guys would be a little reluctant to tell what happened, but she, after her second turf start, Tyler came back, thought we were going to win. Actually, be honest, he said the same thing in the Pocahontas as well. We loomed up like we were going to run by horses, and she just completely flattened out. Well, both times that Tyler actually rode her, he expressed that he felt like she couldn't breathe, like she was displacing. So after the second turf start, we sent her right down to the fairgrounds. There's a veterinarian there named Dr. David McCoy, and he's one of the better throat guys in the entire industry. A lot of big time guys use him to perform myectomies, and he does it. It's very quick. It's not intrusive at all. And so we sent her down there. We did a myectomy tour. We gave her the rest of the winter off, and you know, she's been moving forward ever since. A lot of those surgeries are kind of 50-50, whether or not they work. It may be that people misdiagnose it. Maybe the horse wasn't as good as they thought they were, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But with her, we always thought she was very, very good, and it seems like that has worked out really, really well for us. So we couldn't go the entire show without giving him a little bit of credit, and that's essentially where we are. Now, going back to our first race, and this is probably going to be a topic that we discuss further on in the show, she actually did not run that bad. Go back and look and see who broke her maiden that day against us.
Yeah.
And that's I find it to be completely, I don't know, it's poetic what's happening, in my opinion.
Yeah, Champion Wonder Wheel, by the way, the horse you're referring to.
Yeah, I'm related to the guy who trained her, so it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. You know, and this really does open the door now with the defeat of Pretty Mischievous and the defeat of Hoosier Filly. This opens the door for Wonder Wheel to run big in the Ashland Stakes at Keeneland. We'll see her on opening weekend, April 7th. If she runs well there and she wins that race, she's the likely favorite in the Oaks, but now you have one of the main contenders too. What a great storyline unfolding. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, my dad, when I first went on my own, I don't know if he was saying it tongue-in-cheek or whatever, but he was basically just implying that he couldn't wait until there came a time, 3 or 4 years from then, that we would start running against each other in high-profile races. Well, now he's going to get his wish. And I'm not so sure he's going to like the outcome if it goes my way.
Yeah, what a fun rivalry though, right? I mean, it's so cool now to be able to be on that level, and you have to be very proud, Norm, of everything that you've accomplished in a very short time to get to this point, running now hopefully in races like the Kentucky Oaks if all goes well. Man, you got to be very proud of everything you've accomplished.
I'm proud. I was actually telling Gabby, my wife, that I was really, really proud of the way this winter has gone, and not just because we've won a lot of races and we're winning at a high rate. That's fine. I think a lot of that was circumstantial, and we've been very fortunate in a lot of ways to win a lot of these races. But I think the thing that I really took from this winter that has me excited is that every weekend I've been in stakes. And actually, before the Fairgrounds Oaks, I had said something to Gabby. I said, you know, we're every weekend we're running in stakes, and it's only a matter of time before we start winning them. And I truly believe that. Like we've started to get the horses and the clients that you need to perform at the highest level. And it was just a matter of time, because as long as I worked with Dad, especially the last 3 or 4 years of my tenure with him, you know, we learned to manage these type of horses. These are a Southlawn is the type of horse I'm much more comfortable with, because those were the ones that I was around all the time.
Yeah.
Now, I believe that I've become a better trainer because the last 4 years I've had claimers. I've had horses that weren't necessarily meant to be big horses, and I've learned to manage them, and those have made me a better trainer. But now we're getting back to what I'm really comfortable with. And I think you can see the proof is there.
Oftentimes when people talk about a person like Todd Pletcher, they'll talk about his program and the horses fitting into his program and things being very well thought out and methodical and planned out. For you, did you have to have some type of program in place and at least a thought process in place, Norm, as you started your career to get yourself to this level?
No, I just trusted what I know. I really believe that my team and the way we do things is the right way of doing things. The one thing about Dad, about working for Dad, and I know that you and I have talked about this before on your show, is that when I was an assistant with Dad, he basically threw the reins at me. So, it may have been his name in the program or whatever, but I was making a lot of decisions about daily routine stuff, when we were going to breeze horses, how we were going to breeze them, who was riding them, all the things that most trainers make those decisions, he threw the reins at me to do. So I just simply took what I was doing when I was working for Dad and brought it along. And I have a saying, trust the process. Well, I trust what we do. And it's just a matter now, as I alluded to earlier, that those horses, we're getting those higher level horses now. So hopefully the ball is rolling now. I just expect bigger and better things for our barn.
What'd your dad have to say after the win?
He was very proud. I think, our relationship was a little contentious after I left. It's now much, much better. I think he was
good.
Worried probably. I think he was probably just a worried dad that he knows how tough this is. It's not an easy deal. You got to have a lot of luck. You got to know what you're doing. You got to have a lot of money to kind of subsidize while things are not going well. And now he's seeing what's happening, and I think he can finally kind of be a little bit almost relieved that things are going exactly the way that I personally thought they would. So he was he was one of the first people who called. He was very, very proud, and that makes me proud, because at the end of the day, all I want to do is make my parents proud, and I think that's what we're doing.
I would certainly say so. Norm Cassey, my special guest on the first half of Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Larry Ravelli going to join me in the second half of the program coming up in just about 15 minutes or so. Talking about Southlawn and that big win in the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, Norm Cassey will have the opportunity to make the walkover for the Kentucky Oaks if everything goes according to plan. Tell me a little bit more about Robert Masterson, because this is a name, when you think about the Cassey legacy, this is a name that is synonymous with the Cassies.
He was, Robert's just a great man. He's a very lucky man. I mean, he you have to put yourself out there to have a horse like Southlawn, but year in, year out, he's always putting up money to buy quality horses. A lot of times, unfortunately, it just doesn't work. You have a lot of bad luck. But it seems to be rolling again. We've had a lot of success for him the last couple months with different types of horses. So he seems to really have – his luck has really seemed to turn around. I think the main thing, I'd like to say about Robert is that when I did leave Dad, he was one of the few guys that went along with me. So he supported me from day one. Southlawn is the first big-name horse that we've had together now, but it's truly It's very sweet to have a horse like this for him.
Of course, Robert, also the owner of Champion Teppan, who you oversaw so much of her training. I know we talked about that through her magical run. Do you think that played a major role in his decision to stay with you and send you some horses afterwards?
Sure. I mean, yeah. he was aware of what was going on. He knew that I was with her day in, day out. And by virtue of having her, not only was he aware of what was going on as far as, you know, my involvement with her, but it also, you know, he was one of the few guys that I actually had a relationship with, making phone calls with him, talking to him daily about Teppan. So it was just natural. And I think a lot of the guys were a little reluctant to leave Dad, and he didn't entirely leave Dad, but I think, you know, you didn't want to step on anybody's toes and you didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I don't think Robert really cared. I think he was fine sending horses with me, and he likes me and I like him, and it's a really good team.
Yeah, it's an interesting balance when something like this happens, not just with a father and the son, but anytime you have an assistant trainer that goes out on their own after working with somebody for a long time, it is a really tricky balance sometimes for owners, right?
I think it is. And, and the further removed that I am now from the entire situation, now that we're, you know, basically getting ready to start year six here, in hindsight, it's difficult. I've got two really good guys, Victor and Will, that are my assistants. I would feel like I was a failure to them if they didn't leave me. Because that's what you're doing this for, right? But when they leave me, it's going to be very, very hard for them, for me to feel comfortable with them taking some of my clients.
Yeah.
But it's just the thing, that's how it works, right? So it's, like I said, it's different. I'll just put it that way.
Why can't I stop picturing a scenario where South Lawn has the lead in the Kentucky Oaks at about the, let's call it the eighth pole, and then Wonder Wheel's making a run on the outside, and I can't get this vision out of my head now of what that moment would be like.
It would be, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. We still got a long time before that can happen. At this point, I would just love to be able to go over there for that scenario. Just for the scenario of us running against each other, for me to have our first Oak starter, that would be an accomplishment in itself. But with all that being said, if I'm in front at the eighth pole, I don't think anybody's beating me.
Yeah, she's a pretty tough customer when she gets the lead.
I think so. I think the main thing is that she has one big sustained run. We can't go this whole conversation without kind of giving credit to Ray Lou.
Yeah.
He's worked her all winter. Decision was made early on. He was clearly, he was riding lights out at the fairgrounds, clearly the best rider there at this meet anyways. And it was an easy decision to put the leading rider on him. But he came in and he worked her every time she worked. They get along really well. And I think one of the, you know, other than the throat surgery, the other big component to it is that Ray Lou gets along with her really well. And instead of rushing her right off her feet, trying to put her and make her forwardly place, he lets her get into a rhythm, and then she naturally takes over, and he allows it. And I think, I think he deserves a lot of credit for her success this year.
You're now 5 years into this training career, Norm, at least the training career on your own, and you're now a grade two winning trainer, which has a beautiful ring to it. What are a couple of the things that you've learned over the past 5 years, maybe even some changes that you made to the way that you run your program or your business?
I mean, there's so many different things. I've already kind of talked about it. I know that I'm a better trainer now. I know just because of the horses that we've done well with. I feel like I've learned the differences between a sprint and a route horse. Like, instead of being a new beat is a perfect example. So that's the filly that Broker made earlier on in the Louisiana Derby card for Robert. That filly is super, super fast, right? Disappointed with the way that she ran the first time. Yeah, she had a bad trip. She clipped heels, all those things. But she was outrun the entire time. Well, now, instead of going back and trying sprinting her again, which is probably what I would have done 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. we went ahead and started routing her. And that's the difference to me. That decision early on is the difference between a 15% trainer and a 20% trainer. It took me one less start to figure out what she's good at. And that in a whole is what I feel like we've gotten a lot better at, is just figuring out horses earlier on in their career what they want to do best. And believe me, there's going to be plenty of horses that humble me and make me seem really dumb, but we've just gotten better at that. As far as the business side of things, it's every day I'm learning something about that. It's completely new when you're running a business. That's probably the hardest part. Usually when Dad and I talk, we don't even talk about horses anymore. I mean, other than, you know, like something like Wonder Wheel winning the Breeders' Cup or South Lawn winning, we'll talk about that. But if I'm calling him for advice, it's typically how to run the business, what I should do in this scenario. And, you know, unfortunately, like if I have a bad client that I need to handle or something like that, he has so much experience doing those type of things, and I don't. So he's a person that I lean on when it comes to stuff like that.
Well, it's such a great answer, Norm. Such an honest answer, too. And it's interesting you bring up the fact about Newbeat and stretching out after just one sprint race, because Scott Shapiro joined me on my Equine Forum show this past week. I'll reference that show again, because he picked Newbeat. He also picked South Lawn, by the way. So he was on the Norm Cassie bandwagon, and it paid off for him. But I asked him that question. I said, so often we'll hear handicappers or trainers talk about having to give horses a foundation of at least two sprints before they stretch them out. And you just explained perfectly why you didn't do that. And again, that's something that you can only get with experience.
Yeah, and believe me, at the top of the stretch, I was worried that she was not fit enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clear, you know, for three quarters of the race anyways, that this is what she wants to do. So had we got beat because she wasn't fit enough, well, guess what? She comes back in a month, maybe 5 weeks. Now she's much fitter, right? So at least we established that this is what she wants to do, and we built fitness along the way. So it's just little details like that. I feel like day in, day out, most of us, by most of us, I obviously mean trainers, are doing basically the same things. We're training, we're breathing every 7 days, we're doing this, we're doing that. We're all doing the same thing. But the difference between a 15 and a 20% trainer is knowing when to drop a horse, knowing when to stretch a horse out, knowing when to cut a horse back, and making that decision one or two races before it's painfully obvious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to spend just a couple minutes before we get to the commercial break talking about a few of the other greatest stakes winners that you've saddled. And one of those is going to be back in action again on Friday at Oaklawn in the Matron Stakes. That is Pretty Birdie. This is a horse that has meant so much to you and to your career, and she's still going strong. Tell me more about Pretty Birdie and what she has meant to your development.
Oh, she means everything. I have a hard time right now. I know it sounds crazy because the Fairgrounds Oaks is a really, really big deal, and I would say 99% of you guys would suggest that was the biggest race of my career so far. But I have a hard time not believing, because of the significance of what happened, that the Schuylerville with Pretty Birdie wasn't, just because of COVID, shutting down all these racetracks. Saratoga's open to the public for the first time in a year, and we go and win the opening day stake with a Mary Lou Whitney horse.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've never felt that type of pressure before. We ran in Royal Ascot. I didn't feel like that, oh man, we have to win this race today. But I did feel it that day when she won. So that to me is still the highlight of my career, my personal career. And she's just a really cool horse to be around. It's really neat because she's a throwback horse. She's bred top and bottom by Mary Lou Whitney and John Hendrickson. Like, there's not too many horses or too many operations that still do that. And we have to give John Hendrickson a ton of credit. He doesn't buy horses, right? They just breed horses. And let's think about it. Pretty Birdie, Super Quick, and Hard Legacy. So those are three of my stakes winners. They were all bred by them.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have all these people who go out and spend $500,000 on horses, and they don't have that type of success. So, I'm just so proud to be affiliated with that operation and Mary Lou Whitney and John. It's just that to me is a dream come true.
Hard Legacy was your first graded stakes winner, coming in the 2019 Grade 3 Regret Stakes. That moment was so significant. I know Pretty Birdie, you just referenced how important she was because of the win at Saratoga and everything that was going on. But to get that first one under your belt, what was that moment like with Hard Legacy?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was at the time, Julian was riding everything for us. He put a perfect ride on. It's at home. I mean, at the end of the day, Churchill Downs, for better or worse, or whatever anybody wants to say about the place, is to me the pinnacle. So it's at. I'm born and raised in Louisville. The more I win at Churchill, the happier I am. So for it to happen at Churchill, it was pretty significant, and to do it for. You know, a lot of people believe that you grow up in a horse racing family, and that's why naturally I fell in love with horse racing. That's not the case. My mom and dad got divorced when I was very young. My mom decided to stay in Louisville, even though all of her family was from Florida. So now, growing up in Louisville, Kentucky, I fell in love with horse racing myself. It's a big deal here, especially the Derby. And the first horse that I really, everybody has a horse, right? My horse was Smarty Jones, and obviously that Mary Lou Whitney beat him in the Belmont. So, and that was so painful, right? I literally cried when Smarty Jones got beat, and it's like, now I train for them. And it's just the craziest deal. And for us to have our first stakes win with that ownership is just, it's like a fantasy.
Well, it's a fantasy and it's a dream come true for trainer Norm Cassie, out on his own since 2018 and now pointed toward the Kentucky Oaks with South Lawn, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks last weekend. 37 days until the run for the Lilies, Norm. So all the best over the course of the next 37 days. Keep everything on track, and we'll look forward to talking when you get to Churchill Downs.
That'll be perfect. Thanks for having me on again.
All right, thanks for taking the time. Norm Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and what a story, huh? And the fact that the point he brought up about South Lawn being beaten in her first career race at Churchill Downs, being beaten by champion Wonder Wheel, who broke her maiden that day. They were both in the same race. Wonder Wheel, trained by his father, Hall of Famer, dual Hall of Famer Mark Cassie. They could meet again beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs. How cool would that be? What a story. My thanks to Norm for joining me in the first half of the program. Trainer Larry Ravelli comes up next. He'll talk about winning last weekend's Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN.
Don't get lost in the shuffle. Nominate your yearlings today to Fasig Tipton's selected yearling sales, where the deck is stacked in your favor. Starting with the Fasig Tipton July sale in Lexington on July 11th, then the 102nd Saratoga sale in Saratoga on August 7th and 8th, and the New York bred yearling sale in Saratoga on August 13th and 14th. These summer sales annually deliver industry-leading results for sellers. Stand out at the Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including these standout performers.
Poppy Flower is kicking in. Poppy Flower with the momentum.
Nagarok, they come on for the finish, and it is going to be Nagarok.
Out of a Galileo mare, this dual surface star has sired juvenile stakes winners on both dirt and turf. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Perennial leading consigner Eddie Woods is off to another fast start in 2023.
New Grange takes the San Pasqual, but Hopkins is too strong, finishing up powerfully to win the Palos Verdes, and it's Newgate to score by about a head. Reincarnate to take the sham.
It's Rocket Can to win the Holy Bull.
Additional 2023 stakes winners include Occult, Lane Way, and Sharar, who took the Jumeirah Derby in Dubai. Find your next winner at the Eddie Woods consignment at OBS March. Visit eddiewoods.com.
There's plenty of thrills at Gulfstream Park during the championship meet with live racing Wednesday through Sunday. Don't miss the Triple Crown prep races, including the Fountain of Youth Stakes on March 4th and the Florida Derby Saturday, April 1st. Enjoy the races outdoors from the Carousel Club, our Feast in 10 Palms, offering a premium view of the races. For stakes schedules, reservations, tickets, and more, head to GulfstreamPark.com.
Hey everyone, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch here with some exciting news. Beginning next Friday, our Weekend Stakes Preview Show will have a brand new sponsor. Join Bobby Newman and Dave Friedman for the AmWager Weekend Stakes Preview every single Friday from 6 to 7 Eastern right here on Sirius 216 XM 204. You can also stream the show at horseracingradio.net or check it out on the podcast on our website and every major podcast platform. It's the AmWager Weekend Stakes Preview, starting next Friday, 6 to 7 Eastern, here on HRRN.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They come to the top of the home stretch in the Grade 3 Jethro Bistre. And up to the outside, two fills, sweeping up and after the lead. Major Dude from between horses, that's all for Fantastic again. One furlong to go, and the son of Hard Spun, two fills, is opening up here. What a performance, an impassioned run by two fills, who's drawing away with authority. Two fills, brilliant. Taking the Jeff Ruby Stakes, a prime performance. He won by over a half a dozen. In just a half a dozen Saturdays from now, he has a date to run for the roses.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton. Does he ever have that date on the first Saturday in May? Two fills, a winner by 5 1/4 lengths in the Grade 3 Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway last weekend. Going to be joined momentarily by his trainer, Larry Ravelli. You had a chance to hear from Norm Cassie in the first half of the program. If you missed any portion of this show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that on every major podcast platform. And don't forget, too, that you can follow along with us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to keep in touch with us and to keep up to date on everything happening here on the network and all the guests we bring your way. And speaking of guests, it is my privilege to say welcome back to Trainer Talk, Larry Ravelli, and this time as a Grade 3 winner of the Jeff Ruby Stakes. Larry, really appreciate the conversation here, and congratulations, my friend.
Oh, you got it, bud. Thank you. That was awesome.
Yeah, how awesome was that? That was, I think the term was brilliant in the race call. How brilliant was it?
No, it was as visually impressive as we've had one win, you know, lately. Anyways, the way he did it, and you know, we always are anticipating a good effort. We try not to run unless we think we're going to perform well, but that was above and beyond what we thought.
You know, Two Fills has really never run a bad race, and you and I talked before his 3-year-old debut in the LeCompte back on January 21st, and you said his workouts were wowing you. He was that good in the mornings. Didn't run bad that day, actually ran pretty good, ran good in the Risen Star, and now runs great in the Jeff Ruby. What's been the key to the progression?
Well, I think he's getting better. I think he's getting he's really matured and chilled out, which I like as a trainer. Makes my job easier. It's really not so much of what we've done, it's just how he's matured himself, and we've, you know, kept him out of harm's way, which is half the battle. He might be, if you look at his sire, if you look at his father, his father win a big race in the mud, and then he ran out of the TV screen on the poly track at Turfway. If you look back, and it was, you know, 15 years ago. So the horse might have an affinity for the poly track over the dirt. And I would attribute some of that to the way he ran, to be honest with you. But I do think he's getting better as a racehorse, for sure.
Yeah. And, of course, talking about him being a son of Hard Spun, who was simply, tough as nails in his training career. And Two Fills seems to have some of those same qualities. He certainly doesn't shy away from a fight, but he didn't have to fight much last Saturday. Is that a good thing or a bad thing going into the Kentucky Derby in, what, 4 or 5
weeks?
Well,
I would say it's a good thing, just because we didn't have to empty the tank, you know what I mean, in that race. And he's going to have more than ample time in between races, which is good. and the fact that he didn't have to throw him down completely, you know, is a big deal, I think. I mean, he came back great, ate the bottom out of the feed tub the day after the race, walking, dragging the kid around there. So he's come out of it as good as I could, you know, ask a horse to come out of a race of that kind of, you know, that quality of race.
You know, as we sit here today, Larry, Two Phils is the number one horse on the Derby point standings list. He has 123 points. He's 23 points ahead of the horse in second place right now. What's that like for you to look up and see your horse number one?
I know that. My mom told me. My mom sent me a text. It's funny. Yeah. No, it's great. It's great. You know, there's other horses. I know there's other races, and they'll probably shuffle around a bit before the Derby. So, you know, it's exciting, obviously, for us to be there for the first time. We've been in several Breeders' Cups and kind of, you know, fourth and fourth and fifth and fourth and not really cracked the top three. But the Derby is pretty much what everybody's, you know, shooting for, owners, breeders, trainers, jockeys. I don't really get riled up or nervous too much about things, and I'm kind of surprised that I've, you know, it's probably when we get closer it'll get more exciting. But I know how hard it is. Listen, we still have got 5 weeks. You know, shit happens all the time in this game, and it is, you're not there till you're there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's why I wasn't even going to go there and ask you if you thought right that far ahead yet. Because I don't want to jinx you, Larry.
Right.
I know that you're still holding your breath, and you will every single day from now until the first Saturday in May. What do you have to do though with Two Phils over the next 4.5 weeks to make sure that he's ready to peak when you get him to Louisville?
I'm going to just do what we've been doing. I'm not going to change anything. It's the same distance between, you know, maybe 5 or 6 days more than his last race. I'm just going to emulate his last, his up to this race's training regiment, keep him in his familiar surroundings, and the ship to Churchill's not that far from where he trains every day, so probably just play that by ear as far as, you know, look at the weather and stuff like that, as far as track conditions and different places and versus home versus Churchill, and just do the same thing we did before this race. You know, he's fit. He's definitely, you know, if he doesn't get the distance, he doesn't get the distance, but I wouldn't imagine by the way he galloped out in that race that he wouldn't get the distance, but you know, there'll be different horses in that race. You know, he'll be chasing different horses. You might have a different pace scenario, but we're just going to try to emulate what we did leading up to this last race here to the Jeff Ruby and you know, keep him in a plastic bubble, so to say, if we can.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were based at Fairgrounds for the winter, and I mentioned the LeCompte and the Risen Star and his efforts there, which were very good. They just weren't winning efforts. You could have stayed there for the Louisiana Derby, so I'm sure you paid attention to that race, as you know most of those horses. What'd you make of that prep race?
You know, it unfolded, you know, like probably not many people could foresee that outcome, but, you know, the horse went right to the lead. Nobody pressed him, and he went wire to wire. Personally, I don't know if we would have won the race or not. I would probably say no, just to the fact that the way we won this race, you know, I can tell you this, that track probably legged him up. You know, that's a deep track, and you get a lot out of it. He just, you know, we've tweaked a few things with his equipment and Jarrett's style of riding the horse, trying to wait a little longer. And, you know, sometimes the race doesn't play out the way you want it to, but it worked out perfect in Jeff Ruby. And a couple of them other races, he kind of got banged around or he wasn't covered up as long as I'd like him to be, or the speed was backing up into him and he kind of inherited the lead too soon. You know what I mean? And he starts looking around, jumping up and down. So, I mean, I'm obviously happy with the race that we chose, and I chose it for a reason, just because I thought it would be a little bit lighter. It's closer to home, but I had him on the grounds at Turfway for like almost 2.5-3 weeks leading up. He had a nice little breeze over the track, and everything, you know, worked out. It was a big question mark if he'll like the poly, but he seemed to train on it very well. But you never really know. You know, you can go 5/8 or a half mile and think they like it, but when you're going a mile and a quarter,
it's the last part of the race that matters. You know, if they don't like it, they'll jump up and down. If they do like it, they'll do what he did.
What goes into making that call? Is it a back and forth between you and the owners, or is it strictly you saying, you know what, I think he's a better fit for Turfway Park in the lane or the Lane's End?
No,
the,
Jeff Ruby. The owners that I have nowadays are, I mean, these guys are like all my friends. They let me be the coach, you know what I mean? They let me do my thing and pick where we run, and I don't have to even explain it to them, which is great. If that's what you think, let's do it. And they never point the fingers if we're wrong, and it's a good thing. These people are my friends. Like, we eat dinner together, we golf together, we live in the same neighborhood. You know, it's like living. Yeah, so it's nothing like that.
Tell me more about the owners of Two Phils.
Vince Fogley at Patricia's Hope. Friends for a long, long time. We live in the same subdivision. He got in the game probably about 12 years ago. I've been his trainer. He had a partner that kind of came by the wayside after being together for a while. So I was strictly his trainer. He had Mike Tomlinson is this trainer of his. He's had for a long time and a great trainer and a good buddy of ours. And the breeder, Phil Sagan, they stayed in for a percentage when he bought the horse. When Patricia's Hope bought the horse from them, they stayed in for a piece just because they wanted to be, you know, along for the ride, so to say, and probably happy that they did.
No, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure that they are definitely happy about that.
Just phenomenal people. These guys are like family to me, literally. I mean, we, you know, we're like brothers, Vinny and I, and Vinny's mom, Patricia, she's, you know, like a second mother, and it's just a great relationship, and it's fun to do it with people like that.
Yeah, so to bring them to the Kentucky Derby and yourself to your first Kentucky Derby, again, long way to go, but let's say it happens.
Yep.
That has to hold some extra meaning, doesn't it, Larry?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing better than doing it with people that you really, really like and that are family, that's for sure, because you almost get more enjoyment out of seeing them getting the enjoyment out of it, you know what I mean?
You know, I think I mentioned this to you before the LeCompte that morning we visited before that race, but the fact that you have stuck with jockey Jareth Loveberry is something that I think is a wonderful thing, because I think so many times in racing you get to the point where you get to the big races with a good horse, and the person that got you there is the person that is kind of the first to go sometimes, and I'm talking about the jockey. Jareth has done a great job with this horse, and now I'll ask you the question after I just praised you for that. Is he your jockey in the Kentucky Derby?
Oh yeah, no doubt. Never even been a thought.
That's awesome about
me, you can ask anybody. I might be a lot of things, but I'm loyal. I'm a loyal to a fault guy. My people are my people. We live and die with our people. That's the way it goes. And
so
my owners are the same way, which makes us all get along great. It was never even a thought. I mean, why would it be? You guys won races on him. He just won a $700,000 race on him.
I couldn't agree more. I hate when trainers make that move and they switch to another bigger name jockey.
Times, between me and you, a lot of trainers, the problem with is their owners. You know, they want to get involved in stuff that they don't really know anything about. They think they know, but they don't. Or they're listening to 9,000 people in their ear from all over the place. Oh, so-and-so says we should do this, or so-and-so says we should do that, or so-and-so says. And if the horse happens to run a bad third, then they want to knock the ride and say it was a bad ride. Well, I'm the coach of the team, and I don't think it was a bad ride. I think we got outrun, and that's the way it happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, but so-and-so said, but yeah, okay, well, so-and-so can talk all he wants, but that's how it goes. And that's how it goes a lot of times in this game, and people listen to it, and they force trainers to make decisions that they probably wouldn't make, but they don't want to piss off the owner or get, you know, have them change train, you know what I mean, stuff like that. Whereas me, I don't worry about it. That's not even a thought in my mind. Not one time has any of my owners said, Larry, ride a different guy in the last 10 years.
Yep.
Or enter in this race. You know, never, which is a blessing for me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Robert Kraft owns the Patriots? You think he's telling Bill Belichick what plays to run?
He might want to start.
Yeah, lately.
He might want to give it a shot. Put on his Jerry Jones hat and give it a shot.
My point. Yeah.
So what makes Jareth such a good fit for this horse?
Excuse me?
What makes Jareth such a good fit for Two Phils?
Well, at the beginning, really nothing. He's just my guy that rides everything for me. So he had to fit him, whether he wanted to or not. But he's rode the horse. He's probably, in his mind, made a mistake here or there on some ride. He's won four or five races on the horse. Making him a good fit or a bad fit, I think he's willing to, and like we talked about it before the last race, he's after the one race at I think it was not the LeCompte, but the Risen Star.
The Risen Star.
After the race, he's like, shit. He said, I think I moved too soon. He says, I think I just can't get the timing down right. And I told him, I said, listen, maybe you're right. I said, but you can't. Don't beat yourself up over it. And I'm hard. I mean, I'm the worst guy in the world to ride for. I get, I'm always going to tell you what I think, and I hope you got thick skin. And then the next day we're going to go back at it. But I don't think it really was a fault of his, the reason why. And then some other people say, he made the lead too soon. I said, yeah, he made the lead too soon because there was a 30-1 shot and somebody else backing up in his face. What's he going to do? Take back at the quarter pole? You know what I mean? You can't. It's a long stretch. I get it. If you inherit the lead, sometimes you're like, oh, shit. He's not really pushing the button. The horse is dragging him there, and these horses are stopping in front of you. Well, it's time to not be covered up anymore. Otherwise, you're going to get shuffled back to ace.
Yep.
This is what people that don't, listen, they haven't never ridden a race. They don't know what it's all about, but it's easy to sit on your couch and say, oh, that guy should have threw the pass over there. He should have cut through that hole. Yeah, well, when the hole's moving at, 300 miles an hour, it's a little different.
Yeah, and Jareth is somebody who has, it's not like he's never won a race before. He's won,
right.
He's closing in on, let's see, it's 1,758 as we record this show here today. So he knows how to win races. He hasn't won a lot of big races. Two of his four greatest stakes wins have come with Two Phils. But, boy, he fits the horse. He knows the horse, and I love that you're sticking with him.
Yeah, you're only as good as the opportunities you get. You know what I mean? And he's getting opportunities, and he's not fumbling the ball, which is good. He's my guy, and that's how we roll. Owners, trainers, this whole group is this is the way we are. Nothing's the end of the world, and we never point the fingers. And we try to enjoy the ride, enjoy the wins, enjoy the Derby, enjoy the Breeders' Cup, enjoy whatever we're doing in this business, because you can't take anything for granted, because it's hard to get to any spot. People think it's easy to win a race. It's not easy to win a $20,000 claimer, trust me. They think it's easy. And it's not. A lot goes into it, and it's only one way to win and a million ways to lose.
Just to get a horse to the starting gate is a huge accomplishment in this game.
Yeah.
And I've said that many, many times. So forget about winning graded stakes races or even thinking about a race like the Kentucky Derby. That's almost impossible. Just getting a horse to the starting gate is huge, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially, my stable's grown a little bit over the years with the success that we've had, but a lot of guys have a lot more opportunities than we do. We got one, they got 10, and hats off to them. I mean, that's managing all that stuff is another job on, these big trainers, Pletcher and Asmussen and Cox, these guys. I mean, everyone wants to knock them. Oh, they got all these opportunities. Yeah, but it's not easy. I don't care. It ain't easy.
No, they make it look easy, though.
You're going to be jealous of the guy who's got more than you. That's not the way I am. That's the way it is,
Yep. Those guys do make it look easy. It, somehow, yeah,
listen,
I know they have good help and good assistance.
I just managing the whole deal is exhausting to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. And, if anybody knows how difficult it can be, especially to get a horse to a race like the Kentucky Derby, it should be you, Larry, because you think about having the good two-year-olds you've had over the years with, say, the Tabulator and Cocked and Loaded, and they weren't able to get there. And Two Phils was a good two-year-old. Now he's become a really good three-year-old. Maybe he's the one that finally gets you there.
Yep. No, you're right. We're crossing our fingers, and I'm just trying to take every day like every other day until we get there. you know, it's hard not to get excited, but I'm just going to try not to be excited until it's time to get excited.
I'm talking with trainer Larry Rivelli here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Two fills, a winner of the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway last weekend. Now the top horse in the point standings on the road to the Kentucky Derby, and that's where he hopes to find himself on the first Saturday in May. Earlier you said that your mom informed you that he was at the top of that list. I take it mom follows along pretty closely?
Yeah, mom and my stepfather and, you know, all friends and family, obviously. They crossed the wire in the Jeff Ruby. You would have thought I won the Derby. It was 106 text messages within 4 minutes. It took me, honest to God, 106, and I had took me 3 hours to return all of you. Thanks, buddy. All right, pal. You got it, buddy. It was pretty cool. More people are paying attention than you think, because when you're a trainer, you got your head down. You're living in your own world, pretty much. You know what I mean? Everything goes. You don't get done till, you know, you got calls coming in all the time. You're at the barn early. You're talking to this guy. You're trying to do that. I'm entering a horse at a different track, and then I got the horses shipping in from here, and it's always something. You know what I mean? It's always something. This horse is sick at the barn, and where's the vet and the assistants? And it's just, like I said, I've got a pretty big operation, but that's how I have respect for these guys that have these monster operations, is to keep all, just to manage it, let alone the training the horse part is the easy part for most of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It comes natural. I'm a third generation trainer. My grandfather, my uncle, I know what to do. You got to teach. I treat every horse like an individual athlete. I was an athlete myself. I played football all my life. I played with a bunch of guys that were better than me, and I played with a bunch of guys that weren't as good as I was. And everyone trained different. Everyone needed different stuff. You couldn't beat on this guy. You couldn't yell. Coach couldn't yell at this guy. He'd go in a shell. The other guy needed to get smacked in the head every day because it'd be just the way, you know. So this is how you have to train a stable. You got fillies that don't eat. You got colts that are monsters. You got to put the right guy on the right horse. You got to make sure this guy, you know, this guy, it's such an ordeal that people have no idea what goes into it, even the novice outside. So as far as, you know, trainers, I applaud those guys. It's hard to do, where other people want to, you know, say, oh, well, if I had all those horses, it'd be easy. Yeah. Okay. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's from the outside looking in, of course. It's because,
right,
you know,
right,
it's for people that haven't played the game and haven't done that job before. It happens with every sport. And, you know, that's,
yep,
why fans are fans, and they can, you know, they can voice their opinions,
yep,
just like anybody. And that's, you know, that's part of what makes sports great and what makes racing great. How many of those text messages that you got were asking about tickets to the Derby?
Now, yeah, it was funny. That came about a couple days later. Don't feel free if I'm going to be an owl. Just I'll drop what I'm doing to come to the Derby. You know, one of my college buddies I haven't talked to in 30 years.
Yeah.
Sorry,
well, you have to make sure mom is there.
I got to get mom and dad and everybody there, my kids there first. But I highly doubt we'll have any extras.
Did mom have a couple bucks to win on two fills?
No, but stepdad did. Yep.
Oh, that's such great. I mean, it's such a great story, and it's such a great feel-good story. And, you know, let's hope everything stays together over the next several weeks, Larry, and that first Saturday in May is going to be very special for you, for your family, and for the owners as well, who, as you said earlier, they are also like family. So it's a,
yep,
it's a wonderful story, and you're going to have a lot of people out there cheering for two fills simply because of that. We were joking before we started this program here today that our good friend Jerry LaSala, former jockey, he's worked with me here on the radio in the past. He now works helping out disabled riders with PDJF, the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. And he was not at that race last Saturday, and you told him maybe it's a good thing. Maybe he should be staying home.
He told me when this horse came into the barn, and before we actually sold it, their piece to the Foglias, he said he had a dream that we're going to win the Preakness. That's what he told me. And I laughed. And he says, you watch. I swear to God, that's what he told me. I said, where did you come with this? I mean, the horse hadn't even run. He said, I had a dream. I swear. So we always joke about it.
Wow.
He wants me to skip the Derby and run in the Preakness, but I told him no.
Okay, so for people that don't understand, and I mentioned who Jerry LaSala was, but walk me through, we have about 5 minutes left here in the program, walk me through his involvement with the horse.
he is friends with the breeders, mm-hmm. and I've known Jerry. He rode horses for me late in his career, and when I was first coming up, and he was very helpful to me. He would always give me a gauge on my horses, and you know, we just became friends. We're both Italian, so we have a little bit of a connection there. We're proud of our you know, being the same, you know, from the same tribe, so to say. So we always had a little bit of a connection, and the horse was in a sale, wasn't going to bring what they wanted. I was at that sale for other clients. He told me to go look at the horse. I looked at the horse. It looks nice. Had an okay work. And just kind of, you know, I was doing my thing, and I said, whatever you want to do. He said, well, they're not going to sell the horse. It's not getting any action. I said, send the horse to me, because they wanted to sell. At that time, they wanted to sell. They wanted to turn it into money. They thought it was going to be worth a couple hundred thousand, and it wasn't at that particular time, because it's only worth what someone will pay, and nobody wanted to pay for it, apparently. Mm-hmm. So I said, send the horse to me. I'll train it. I will get it to win first time, and then you can sell it, because everyone wants to buy a winner. You know, once they break their maiden, the phones ring no matter where you win at. You can win at Keeneland, you can win at Hawthorne, you can win anywhere. They're going to buy it. So I get the horse, I start training it, and it's working good. And it's working good. And I said, this horse is training great, Jerry. He goes, yeah, sell him. I said, okay, well, I got a guy that'll buy him. So they worked out a deal. They ended up buying for 80%, and Sagan stayed in for 20, and that was Jerry's involvement. He kind of put us all together.
That's great.
He introduced me to Sagan and let me know that the horse was available. He kept telling Sagan, you need to get with Ravelli, because he's a guy in Chicago. He'll make the horse win. It's good with young horses, blah blah blah, and everything worked out like fairy tale type, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. It never happens like that.
One other piece of the puzzle.
I've done a lot of this stuff, been to a lot of sales, I've talked to a lot of people that are friends. They never go as planned. And this went like it was scripted.
Well, you've got to finish that script with a win in the Preakness Stakes in order to make it all come together. And then they'll make a movie about two Phils.
That's funny. That's so funny you said that, because we were just talking about that the other day. The owner, Phil Anthony, he said, we can make a movie. I said, yeah, okay. I'd rather make Let It Ride 2. I still can't understand why they never made a sequel to the original Let It Ride.
That would have been...
It's got nothing to do with us. I just love the movie.
One of the greatest racing movies of all time. Richard Dreyfuss. Yep. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Can you believe they never made a sequel? I can't believe it.
No. That's what we should kind of get on
Rocky
that bandwagon.
8, you got Die Hard 7, you got Lethal Weapon 5. I mean, come on. How do we not have a, you know...
Yeah, I mean, even Rocky too. Balboa won 30 years later or something, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Why not? Well, listen, Larry, we're down to about the final minute, but I just want to, first of all, just start with saying thank you. Thank you for the time here. You're always very generous with your time. And again, congratulations to two Phils, to the connections, and to you and the team and your entire family. This is going to be a fun 5 weeks. Enjoy every moment of it, and I will look forward to seeing you at Churchill Downs.
You got it, bud. Thanks.
All right. Take care. That's Trainer Larry Ravelli here on Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton. Can you get two better people to cheer for than Norm Cassie and Larry Ravelli? My thanks to both of them for being with me here on the program tonight. If you missed any portion, do yourself a favor. Go back and listen again. HorseRacingRadio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts and Podbean and Google and Spotify, every major podcast platform. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. For Norm Cassie and for Larry Ravelli, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to this edition of Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton.